We're back with Gerda Saunders. She is author of Memory's Last Breath, Field Notes on My Dementia. She was diagnosed with early onset dementia just before her 61st birthday in 2010. And she set out to note what was happening to her in a notebook where the subtitle comes in, Field Notes on My Dementia. Important book, and Gerda Saunders continues to write about this. You can check her out at her website, gerdasaunders.com. And we're pleased to have Gerda Saunders with us for another 15 minutes or so. Gerda Saunders, I was fascinated to read in the book, you turn to literature. This is a help to you, as I guess any literate person would turn to some literature. I just want to read a passage here. I'm condensing this slightly.
Okay.
You say, and this is quoting Gerda Saunders from her book, Memory's Last Breath, "While I do feel a bit crazy when I discover myself doing something unusual or illogical, I do not feel mad, quote unquote, most of the time. Am I crazy like a fox, or maybe like Lewis Carroll's cat?" And skipping a bit here, "or maybe like Frida Kahlo, I have resolved to turn, quote unquote, madness into a desirable state. Or maybe in this Don Quixote is my sage. When life itself seems lunatic, who knows where madness lies? Perhaps to be too practical is madness. To surrender dreams, this may be madness. Too much sanity may be madness. And maddest of all, to see life as it is and not as it should be." It's very touching for me to see you connecting with that and I guess searching for the positive, searching for self-identity, and a way through literature to make some sense of what you're going through.
Yes, I think literature has always been important to me. I was a voracious reader as a child and all through my life. And then, of course, I did my PhD in English at the University of Utah. And so there, you know, literature was just the substance of my daily work and life. So it comes naturally to me to look to that for similar experiences. And to say why and how I get to that literature, I have to just say a little bit about the nature of my memory loss. And I think as anybody who knows somebody with dementia or other brain disorders or so knows, memory loss can be very particular. So what's wrong with me is that my short-term memory is shot, and I cannot remember from 1 hour to the next. And my working memory, which is related to short-term memory, and that's a memory that you use to function, to do a series of logical steps one after the other. My functional memory, my working memory, is absolutely pathetic. I cannot set out to do the most ordinary task and know that I will have done it in 5 minutes because I get sidetracked all the time. I make coffee, then I step from the counter to the fridge to get out the milk. Before I open the fridge, I see a picture that my grandson drew. Then I think, oh my goodness, it's his birthday soon. When I see again, I'm sitting at my computer Googling, you know, like geek toys for my grandson's birthday. And if I even got that far, because sometimes I'll come to my computer and I'll see there's a new email and I'll read that, and then I never even get to that. So my whole day goes like that. But why I mention it now is that the oddity of my memory loss is that those kind of things don't work for me at all. But I can remember things I read in books as a child. And so I remember that there was such a thing as something that Frida Kahlo said about a madness. And then I can Google it or look for it, or in some cases, if I still have the same book that I had, I can find it in the pages. But it's not as though I remember those things from literature. It's just that I know they exist. And then I can find it. So I just want to give you an example of how that part of my memory works. So about a month ago, I had a news item about bones having been found in the United States, bone tools having been found in the United States like 100,000 years before they thought people made tools. And so I wanted to tell it to my grandson or granddaughter, and before they came here, I think I'll have to look this up. And at the moment of trying to look it up, I did not know as much as I told you now. I knew there's something about tools 100,000 years earlier. So I Googled that. I came up with nothing useful, because I'd forgotten when I started searching that they were bone tools. So suddenly when I remembered they were bone tools, and I put in bone, and then useful information came up. So I would not have remembered that even now anymore if it hadn't been, you know, for this whole process of remembering. So that triggered my mind again. But so the same way it worked for me, I know there's something in these books. And it's, for me, looking then how other writers wrote about this is very comforting. And if they mentoring me on how to bring philosophical observations to, you know, the daily kind of drag of living with an unsatisfactory state of affairs, in this case, my brain.
I want to ask you about this. This sentence struck me. You're thinking about your mother. So I'll just quote this. In the days after my neurologist gave a name to what was wrong with me, the separate circles in which I'd kept the images of myself as a woman who lives and dies by her rationality and that of my mother after her illness as a Dickensian madwoman gradually began to overlap like intersection of a Venn diagram. And within that convergence, I came out to myself in tones that sounded believable to my skeptical ears. I am dementing. I am dementing. I am dementing. That speaks to your coming to terms with this. Also, it's a poignant way you think about your mother. Now those are those identities, those ideas are starting to converge.
Yes, absolutely. And I still, my mother's circumstances were so different from mine. You know, she had family right there, and she was able to get care at a care center at a far earlier age than I am able to, because, you know, just the way the whole system works there. And you know, that it's cheaper and more affordable. So, whereas for me, I have to cope longer in the world, sort of finding my way. So that it's different in that way, but my sense of oneness and empathy with my mother is so deepened by this. And I think back of her in astonishment, like the visit she paid us before she had the really bad breakdown, and there already were many signs of things not being right. But my mother's always been eccentric, you know. So it was very difficult in her to distinguish her eccentricity from something less deliberately decided. And when I think now of how hard my mother's life must have been when we still expected her to get on a plane on her own, come to the United States, and we would pick her up. And in that particular trip, she just missed her connection. And she did not think to call me. She did not. I had no idea where she was for many hours. You know, I called the airport where she's supposed to leave from. They wouldn't give me the information. You know, how that goes. And in that meantime, she was there all bewildered and, you know, trying to figure this out for herself. So I think of her with so much more empathy than I had at the time. And it's a wonderful thing for me to feel that connection, but it's also an ominous sense of I'm now joining in what she experienced. And you read that whole piece about where I say, I am dementing and so on. And funny enough that when my neurologist used the word dementing, it became something much more personal. It became something in which I had a part, you know, like I'm writing, I'm walking, I'm eating, I'm dementing. It's something that is, it's not my choice, but I nevertheless am actively involved in it. And, you know, dementia as a verb means you have some responsibility for it. So for me, being able to say I'm dementing also enabled me to take responsibility and to say, okay, this happened to me, but I still have the obligation to be the same ethical person I was, for as much as I can distinguish between real and fantasy. I still have to be the good person I've always aimed to be. I still want to love my husband in the best way possible and love my children in the best way possible, but that requires action. It requires a lot of mental work to focus my drifting memory on the people I love. But that is my work, and that is what a diagnosis helped me realize.
We just have a few minutes left here. I want to ask you about what advice you may have for a person receiving a diagnosis of dementia, you know, recently, and that person's family. What advice would you give?
I do have something to say about that, but I just want to say before that diagnoses for different people come at such very different times. And I think most people are diagnosed when they are far more debilitated than I am. And I think it's part because our society makes it impossible or very uncomfortable to people, even if they suspect something, to say, I think there's something wrong with me, or to say to your children, I think I need a diagnosis. So people have a diagnosis forced upon them when they've already lost a lot of capability. So I take that into consideration. But I want to say to anybody, no matter when they have their diagnosis, that there is life after dementia. I have had 6 of the most joyful years of my life since my diagnosis in whenever it was. I find that there is a wonderful thing about deliberately living in the moment, not thinking about, you know, what you have to do tomorrow, but just being with this person in the moment where the two of you are and enjoying that. And also, I think this counts not only when you get a diagnosis, but for anybody, make your peace with people who are important to you. Make sure that you think about everyone you know. If I die tomorrow, will I have made good for them? And if the answer is no, make good with them now. And I also think that the only thing I think one can do if you have dementia is to set smaller goals and pursue them as hard as you ever pursued the most difficult goal of your life. But your smaller goals will be, how do I live ethically and with honor today with the people I love? Because that is all we are only sure of today. And there is great joy in living in that way.
Finally, Gerda Sanders, I understand that your plan is you're wanting some control over your death. You're looking for assisted dying, and therefore you may have to leave the country.
That's true. I wish for a legal assisted death, and my family and my husband have absolutely so very graciously agreed to give me this gift of being able to not live in a shell of a body, that where no thinking on the level of how I want to think is happening. And they have given me the gift to say that they would take me somewhere where I can achieve that. I would so much more love to die in this way, in my own bed, in my own home. But currently, that is not possible for anybody in the United States with dementia or with any mental disorder where you cannot say, I am a sound mind. So I am at great peace for having made this pact with my children and my husband. And I will do the same for them. It may be that one of them needs this gift before I do. And I will support them and those of them who can practically, support them in that. I will give my every bit of my support to that. And I wish that this were possible here, because people will think that I can never ask a family member to help me with an assisted death. The question is, what is your alternative? Are you asking them to take care of this body that takes in food in one end and eliminates it at the other? This body that takes so many hours of other people's lives, that their marriages get ruined, their health get ruined, they financially can become very unstable. Do I require of the people who love me to spend hours with me, trying to keep me physically out of trouble, to catch me when I'm running away, to lie waiting for a phone call at night when I've disappeared and the cops are looking for me, as it happened all the time with my neighbor across the road? So I just want people to know that there's a whole set of questions you must ask, as well as that question of, can I ask this of someone I love? And I have been selfish enough to ask that of my family, and they have been generous enough to grant me that wish.
Well, we are out of time. A fascinating discussion, important as well. Gerda Sanders has been with us, author of Memory's Last Breath, Field Notes on My Dementia. Gerda Sanders, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Tom, and it was a pleasure speaking with you.